Welcome back to the Multifamily Investing Podcast. This is Charles Dobbins, the founder of the Multifamily Investing Academy and the MultifamilyAttorney.com. And every week we delve into the good, the bad, the ugly, the comic, the heartbreaking stories of multifamily ownership. They will inspire you to do what you've always dreamt of doing. So sit back and enjoy the best training on multifamily investing on the internet today. Enjoy.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, that's a great question.
It's a great question.
Great question.
It's a good question.
This is a really good question right here.
It's a great question, by the way.
That's a great question.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, so that's a great question, Charlie.
Great question. You want it?
Yeah, that's a great question.
You know, that's a great question.
Good question.
Great question.
Great question.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Hey everybody, Charles Dobbins, the multifamily attorney, the founder of the Multifamily Investing Academy, and the founder of the creator of the Multifamily OS program. I'm here today with Neil Bauer of Grow Capitus. And folks, you are in luck because Neil and I are going to solve the problem of Ukraine and Russia on this call. And it's going to start with my first question to Neil. Neil, since the first Iraqi war, we have not fought wars the way we used to. I mean, I saw something where we're trying to match up how many tanks we have versus how much Russia has and how many planes we have versus how that doesn't matter anymore. What matters now is the fact that we are a $20 trillion GDP country against a 1.5 GDP country. Why can't we just show them like who's boss? You know, who is it that says whoever can spend the most money on a new client will always win? Like we can spend, Ronald Reagan showed us right from the very beginning, just by how to beat Russia. You just can outspend them. Why don't we put it to these guys right now and for all, oil, shut down and walk away, you know, have a nice day, Russia.
Let me answer that. So for what we are doing currently is actually the most efficient way of fighting a war.
Right.
We're fighting a media war. We haven't fired a bullet. We haven't shed a drop of blood, but we have recruited successfully hundreds of thousands of people to fight an enemy that had to be fought. And those people are doing our job for us. And all we're doing is sending them anti-tank weapons. If you look at the efficiency of this war compared to Iraq and Afghanistan, we're at least 100x to 1,000x more efficient because in the end, this crackpot has to be fought because, as you know, he's already attacked Georgia, he's attacked Crimea, he's attacked the Ukraine before. Yeah. From a kind of a guerrilla war perspective.
Right.
So he already knows which country he's going to attack next, and it's Moldova, right? So everyone that's next to his border that has some thought of becoming part of the EU or becoming part of NATO, he's basically going to attack them, get in there in 2 days, remove whoever's in power and replace them. And he already successfully, by the way, did that with Georgia, right? That was a 5-day war. So he managed to get exactly what he wanted. This time he miscalculated. So the bottom line is, we could do exactly what Charles Dobbins just talked about. Why would we do it? It's 10 to 100 times more expensive and dozens of times more bloody. We're actually doing it without shedding a drop of blood. He's lost 10% of Russia's armed force capability in 31 days.
And exactly. Now let's just talk about that. I saw that this morning also. That blew me away. It's like, this is one of the world's superpowers. And they lost that much? I mean, they're losing their generals. They're losing their colonels.
Out of 20 generals are dead. Out of 20, right?
What the, how, who screwed up this battle? I think it's going to be his minions. Putin was told, you know, that, oh, we'll just walk in there. And he believed them.
Well, I think he's changed a lot. So in the last 5 to 10 years, he's changed from where he was before, where he would listen to people. It seems like his minions told him what he wanted them to tell him.
Right.
And when that happens, you get this. I mean, Hitler obviously had the same kind of issue. He wanted to basically go to Russia. They knew that, you know, attacking Russia in World War II was the end of Germany. Nobody told him. And so that happened. That's history. So when I'm looking at this, Currently, the United States is actually fighting the best war it's ever fought, the most efficient war it's ever fought. Javelins are cheap, by the way. We make them for $80,000 each, and they are killing a $1.2 million tank, right? Yeah. And we're not paying the soldier,
yeah,
right? It's yeah, extreme efficiency. The EU zone is taking the hit. Their oil cost, their gas cost went up 21% yesterday after, you know, Russia demanded.
Wait, whose did?
The European Union, the EU.
Okay.
Right. So obviously, you know, we symbolically, I mean, just imagine what an incredible position we're in, right? The United States uses 18.3 million barrels of oil per day, right? Which is about 20% of what the world uses, 18.3 million barrels. Of those 18.3 million barrels, only 270,000 barrels, exactly 1.5%, comes from Russia. And we don't get any natural gas from them because we make our own, right? So, right. So basically, and that 1.5%, we replaced it in 9 days by calling the Canadians and saying, hey, could you pump a little bit more yeah, oil and send it our way? Because most, you know, most people think that the US buys US oil. That's completely nonsensical. The US takes all of its oils and sells it to other people because it's more profitable. And then we buy our oil from Canada. Because Canadians do not have the ships or the ports to sell oil to the world. We have ports in Louisiana for natural gas, and we have ports in Houston for oil, refined oil, not crude oil, right? Canadians right, are basically sending crude oil to us. We take their crude oil, we refine it, we make profit on it in the US, and then we sell it to people outside and then make another set of profits, right? So yeah, we're like the king of this game in terms of actual profit. And so what we did basically was we were like, okay, we'll turn off the tap on this 170,000 barrels a day, no big deal. And we'll bring oil in from Canada. And people might immediately say, so why did our gas prices go up? The answer is we are a free market economy. We don't have any mechanism to control the price of oil. The price of oil is set once. Brent crude is basically set at a world level. There's no Brent crude being set at a US level. So obviously we still have to pay more if the world's paying more. But keep in mind, right now, today, at the pump, the Europeans are paying $7.75 and we're paying about $4.25. So we still have the cheapest gas in the world, yeah, bar Russia and bar Venezuela. Right, okay. Those two countries, gas is cheaper than here.
Okay, but a year or so ago, I was paying $2.50, you know, versus, you know, now it costs me over $100 to fill up.
Yeah, so it's a shock, right? The point is this, nobody wants a war, but in the end, the nature of democracy and freedom is such that every 10, 15 years, you're going to have somebody who's going to come in and say, since you guys are not going around killing other people, I'm going to start killing people and see what you do, right? Are you going to up the ante? I went into Georgia and in 5 days killed everybody, put a puppet in there, and you didn't do anything. Right. And then in 2014, I went into Crimea and basically in 2 days, Crimea was mine. Then I did it with the Donbass. And so it seems like you guys are really not punishing me that much. You put weak sanctions in place. Well, this time, I think the water went over the nose level. The sanctions that we have put on Russia are extraordinary, are punitive beyond anything that I've ever seen done. And what's interesting is that the United States is the biggest beneficiary. And I'll explain that in detail, but the biggest beneficiary is not the European zone, not the Chinese, not the Indians. The biggest beneficiary is not even the Ukraine. It's the United States of America.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. We're going to come back to that. I'll write that down. But why is it different this time with Ukraine versus the other times? What happened? And my knee-jerk response, my first blush response would be Zelensky.
I think two pieces to this. There are two separate pieces to this. I think the catalyst was Zelensky. For the first time, the Georgians basically were rolled over in 2 days before they had the chance to even tell the world what happened. It was just done, right, in 2 days. What Zelensky is the first, you know, person that's fighting this kind of evil that is extraordinary in his social media capability. And so I think the biggest mistake that Russia has made so far is not where they positioned their armies. They should have cut his internet first. He's every day he's presenting to the US, you know, to the UK parliament. And the next day he's presenting to the US, everyone's giving him standing ovations. Then he talks to the Germans. Then he talks to the Israelis. Then he talks to the Japanese. Basically, this guy has become the world's biggest political celebrity. Yeah. And you have let him have internet?
Yeah.
Right? Why didn't you first attack all the technological like installations using, that's what we do. We cut off internet on the first day. First, we attack the technology, and then we attack the physical locations, right? They have failed to shut his internet down. 31 days in, he's still walking around talking on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he has made the war personal to Americans. You know, like there's people in America, Charles, who think that we are fighting the Ukraine war. He's made it this personal. If you go to the homepage of Fox News or CNN, it's indistinguishable from an American war. We're not fighting this war. We're not involved. There's no soldiers here. I mean, we're not moving tanks. But it looks like on the homepage of everything that we are fighting a war. Why? Because of Zelensky. He's made this personal to all of us. And he's turned this basically into a jihad in the Eurozone, where for the first time, 27 countries that never agree on everything have basically agreed on everything, including cutting Russia off from SWIFT. No country that has ever attacked another country has been cut off from the internet banking, the international banking system. So basically, Russian banks can't speak to any other bank in the world.
Yeah.
Right? You can't send a wire transfer from Russia to anywhere in the world right now. And that is extraordinarily punitive. Why? Because this guy basically made the war real to the Europeans. And the Americans, of course, were like, oh, sure, we'll do it because we wanted to teach a lesson to this sucker for the last 20 years. He keeps getting worse and worse. And why don't you guys send all of your weapons and all of your people and have 3.5 million refugees that you have to feed, and we'll send some javelins.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let me ask you this. You mentioned this before. Just when you were first starting, that this is a media war. And not so much Zelensky, but just from a consumer standpoint, people are so anti-Russia, they're you know, voting with their checkbooks here. You know, they're not turning away from anything that's Russia. I mean, they were talking about having companies pull out of Russia or stop doing business with Russia without the government even telling them that they had to do it. They just, the consumers.
Right. There's a lot of volunteerism going on, which is not normal, right? Companies don't cut off their own legs like this. McDonald's walked away from, you know, $6-7 million a day in licensing revenue, right? Yeah. It's a lot. It's billions, right? So we are seeing this become personal to Americans in a very interesting, unique sort of way.
Right. Right. Because now, you know, it's not like we're having to watch the three big networks tell us what to do. Now, TikTok, Twitter, everything, we're all talking amongst ourselves and doing it on our own. And they're feeling the impact like they've never felt before. Because, it's
at very little cost to us. We have taught every dictator in the world a lesson. Every dictator in the world, the next guy, because there's always a next guy. There's always, you know, somebody who's like, I am going to be different. No, you're not. These people are horrible, right? The lesson we taught Russia on the second day of the war was the best lesson that anybody has ever learned, right? And that lesson is he built up his foreign exchange reserves over 20 years so he could fight in wars. And we simply kept all of his money. We kept all of his foreign reserves. So he can't transact. So this war chest that he's built, he has this massive war chest of dollars. He has no access to them.
Yeah, that's right? Beautiful.
He had no idea that we would go that far. So it's been incredibly beneficial. And you know, what's interesting is a lot of people are like, well, this can't be good for the US. Okay, well, let me ask you this one question. Pick the top five big stock markets of the world, right? So you're going to pick the British market, the German market, Japanese, right? The US market, you know, and maybe the Hong Kong. Hong Kong's a big market, right? Please look at how many are above the level as they were the day before the war. Is there a market that is today above the level the day before the war? And the answer is there's one market, and it's the United States. Every other market is down from 31 days ago. Every other market is down.
That brings me to the, you know, getting back to the original question I paused you on, which is why is the U.S. the biggest beneficiary of this war? Hi, my name is Charles Dobbins. I'm the founder of the Multifamily Investing Academy, and for the last 10 years, I've been coaching and consulting with multifamily investors, teaching them the right way to buy apartments and build a successful multifamily business. I have worked with investors who started with me owning zero units to now owning over 6,000 apartments, and there have been many clients who now are in my 1,000 unit club. Just by my understanding of an investor's knowledge of two things, I can tell from the first conversation that I have with that investor whether they are going to be a success or if they won't even get past the first offer. Now, what are those two things? The first thing is knowing that no matter how knowledgeable you are about properties, markets, finance, it's all meaningless if you don't know anything about sales and marketing. And the second thing is that you need systems in your business that work even when you don't. Now, I've developed a new program for multifamily investors that should be your very first sales and marketing system. It automates the process of generating property leads from brokers and owners, as well as keeps you connected with your investors every single month. And then I took it one step further. I decided to give you access to my marketing team that are employed by me, trained by me, and will now work for you. I already have the staff trained and they're ready to execute. And in addition to providing you with trained staff, I'm going to give you the tools I use to automate the system. I'm going to give you access to my custom designed multifamily CRM software that systematizes your marketing to your investors, owners, and brokers and connects you with your new employee. And believe me, on this podcast commercial, I'm just scratching the surface of all the features my program provides. So go to www.multifamilyinvestingacademy.com/your marketing system and sign up today. And for being a loyal listener of my podcast, on the checkout page, use discount code podcast, and I will reduce the one-time setup fee by $500. Let's start working together today. And now back to the show.
Okay. Well, number one, the cost of having 3 million refugees is being paid for by European countries like Poland and Germany and Switzerland and Norway. Basically, they're streaming in there. Imagine what it costs to feed 4 million people a day, right? They're paying for it. Number two, the vast majority of the weapons sent are them. Number three, we've taken a hit to our gas prices. They've taken a much larger hit to gas and natural, you know, to oil and natural gas. But here's the catch. We are taking a hit to ourselves, meaning every incremental dollar that Charles paid yesterday at the pump went to an American. But every incremental dollar that the European Union is paying went to Russia, went to the enemy. Because right now, every day, hundreds of millions of dollars go from the Eurozone, still today, to Russia, to Gazprom. Because the oil is still flowing, the gas is still coming from Russia. So imagine fighting a war with the enemy and giving them hundreds of millions of dollars a day.
Yeah, but I thought they were, I mean, I just saw something about the UK was going to start you know, limiting their businesses with Russia.
UK is, well, let's right now, let's just talk about gas because it's the big number, right? Let's talk about the big numbers first and we'll talk about the small numbers. Today, only one country in the Eurozone has stopped buying Russian gas and oil, and that's the UK, because they have the North Sea oil rigs and they can pump more. They're in a sort of situation like
us. Neil, I think there's a second country that's not buying it anymore. Ukraine probably is not buying it from Russia.
That's right. The Ukrainians have stopped buying Russian oil. That's right. they're busy doing some other stuff. So it's interesting what is happening. The Eurozone is in this can't win situation. You have somebody for the first time, and you ask me this question, why Ukraine? Why this time? Firstly, because of Zelensky, but there's other reasons. Ukraine's a big country. When somebody attacks Georgia or attacks Crimea, which is basically not even a country, it's just a free state inside of a country, it's different. It's limited. But if this guy takes 170,000 soldiers and 2,000 tanks and attacks a big country, which is providing the world's nickel, it's providing the world's wheat, Ukraine is important to the world. Nobody gave a damn about Georgia, right? 25% of the world's wheat comes from Ukraine. 85% of the world's nickel. We use nickel to build batteries and to build semiconductors. You know, the processor in your computer right now has nickel that came from the Ukrainians, right? So now he's attacking a country that actually is hitting our pockets. That's the reason why. In the end, it's always about money, Charles. It's always about money, right? We can't afford to have a war that's a year long and not get nickel, not get neon. Neon, by the way, is used in production of all semiconductors across the world. More, the vast majority of the world's neon comes from the Ukrainians. They're the only ones that actually have manufacturing capability for neon. So imagine what's happening to the price of neon, nickel, copper, and palladium. Palladium is also used in semiconductors. Everyone's looking at money. It's not just because this guy knows how to use the internet. You know, the Ukraine is key to the world's supply chain.
Okay. Right? Let me ask you, do you think Putin is stable mentally?
I think Putin is one of those people that has a very strong belief that he and Russia have been wronged. They've been wrong.
Who does that remind you of?
Well, yeah, I mean, a whole bunch. I'm not going to go there. I am not going there, right? So bottom line is, this man firmly believes he's in the right.
Were you just thinking I was talking about Trump?
Yes, I was.
No, I was talking about Hitler.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. The original guy who thought that everybody was screwing him, right?
Well, that might have been Napoleon.
Napoleon, then Hitler. That's right. Those are the two big ones that come to mind. And Trump, of course, thinks that everyone's screwing him all the time, right? So bottom line, though, is I don't think that this guy is unstable. I think that this guy has a huge grievance. And I think that because he has had absolute control over this country for 20 years and everybody absolutely listening, eventually you keep saying things that everybody repeats back to you. And those things become the truth. They become dogma. This is dogma, right? So if today you attacked, you know, a sacred site, a site that's sacred to the Sunnis, the site that's sacred to the Shiites, every Muslim country in the world would attack you back, right? That's religion. It's dogma. What he believes is now Russia's religion, Russia's dogma. Everyone says these things for years and years and years until it is now the very truth. There's no opportunity for there to be another truth.
You know, how is this playing out with the Russian people?
Well, from what I can tell, because of the fact that VPNs now exist and Russians have been smart enough over the last 10 years, most Russians have VPNs. They're listening to both sides of the story. From what I can tell, about half of them believe everything Putin is doing is right. They think he's a hero. Yeah, and the other half basically know that what's going on. And most of them, there's just nothing they can do about it. I really feel for the Russian people. But there's a lot of folks that think they're going to overthrow him. I think most people don't understand. The Russians have been oppressed for 300 years. They've gone through purges. They've gone through Stalin, who is definitely a lot worse than Putin.
Oh, yeah.
It is not easy to remove the power in Russia. That's not how their power structure works. The chances that he's going to be deposed are really very small. Now, a year from now is different because, you know, war ends and eventually they're like, okay, this guy's gone completely nuts. We need to take care of him. That's different. But in the middle of this, you're still going to have Putin there a month or 2 months from now, unless he has a heart attack or something like that. So I don't think that's the exit to the war. The exit is what is already happening. The exit is yesterday and the day before, the Ukrainians took territory back from Russia.
Right.
Because
right.
from what I can tell, there's no resupply lines. And his soldiers are getting frostbite, right? He bet that he can win in 3 days because when is the worst time to ever conquer a country? In the middle of the freaking winter.
Yeah.
And so you're like, how could this guy be so dumb? He's not dumb. He knows that the Eurozone can't stop buying natural gas in the middle of the winter.
Oh, right? That's interesting. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's so cold in Germany and Poland and Finland right now. They can't stop his taps. They can't stop his source of revenue. And they haven't. I mean, you know, the U.S. tried for a week to try to get the Europeans to cut off the oil and gas. And the answer was go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Right. We're not doing it. We can't basically just stop heating our homes in the middle of winter.
Exactly.
So bottom line is that he made a miscalculation. He said, I'll go in the winter because they can't stop my source of revenue and I'm going to be done in a week anyway. The problem now is frostbite. The problem now is that the Ukrainian ground is slushy and the tanks are sinking in it. I mean, he's in a complete no-win situation. My only fear is that he has chemical weapons and he also has nuclear weapons. And so if you push him into a corner, if the Ukrainians, the Ukrainians moved him from 15 miles outside Kiev to 30 miles in a single day yesterday, right? If they push him all the way out, who knows what he's going to do, right? That's the X factor for the world that nobody has an answer to. But the NATO is being very clever in saying, look, this is not our war to fight. This is not a NATO country. We're going to give him weapons, but we're staying out of it. But we're going to amass a bunch of troops there in case you go crazy and start to use the nuclear weapon option. So we're ready to attack you if you use nukes. As long as you stay conventional, looks like the Ukrainians are doing a pretty good job kicking your butt anyway.
Yeah, no kidding. So you said, before I move on to the last question, I want a clarification of something. You said that about 50% of the Russians, you know, think that Putin can do no wrong and, you know, he's the best guy. So there are even Democrats in Russia? Is that what you're saying?
Really? Love it. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Oh, my gosh.
The answer is his propaganda machine is just as good as Hitler's. It's a phenomenal machine. And you know, you kind of, if you go and listen to this stuff for 24 hours, at the end of 24 hours, you might have a little bit of sympathy for what he's doing. It's programming after programming after programming.
Oh, you know something? I'll tell you, I thought I saw some of his, might've been Russian Times or something. I started seeing some of that propaganda where it wasn't so much building up of Putin, but it was tearing down of the Ukraine and showing why Ukraine's so bad and why, they deserve to have this. And Putin's actually the knight in shining armor that is going in there saving the day. You know, that was the article that I was looking at. I think, I'm not going down this path. But okay, put on your crystal ball. How is this all going to end? How soon? How bad? What's the final repercussions? What's the world going to look like 3 years from now?
I don't think it lasts years. In my mind, within 2 months, there has to be a ceasefire because the Russians are going to run out of soldiers and oil. And so, but he's a very, very good negotiator. So I'm just going to basically say he gets the three things that he wants and he doesn't get the fourth. The three things that he gets are Crimea, which he deserves, by the way. Most Crimeans are Russians. And there was a United Nations poll in 2014 that showed 89% of Crimeans wanted to join Russia.
Right? Okay, now let me stop you right there. Mm-hmm. That reminds me of really how World War II got started over that Danzig port, which was considered all German. The Germans, and it was given to them by Woodrow Wilson, you know, lying down on the floor in France and just carved up the country. Gave them Danzig and Hitler just wanted it back.
There's very clear evidence that Crimea should never have been given to the Ukraine. It happened when the USSR broke up. Some idiot basically, just as part of redrawing lines for the breaking up state, drew that part as part of Crimea simply because there's a land connection to Crimea and there isn't a land connection to Russia. I think it should have become at that point a Russian country. So I think he's going to get Crimea because, you know, the Ukrainians obviously know all of this. He's going to get the Donbas area, which is the part of the eastern part of Ukraine that is friendly to Russia. And then he's going to get the third thing that he wants, which is that the Ukraine will put into its constitution that it cannot join NATO. Right? Those are the three things he gets. Now, the fourth thing is the one he cares about the most, and that's what he's not going to get. He wants to replace Zelensky with a puppet. He wants to basically, how do you demilitarize a country? You put it in their constitution, you put in the clause that the Swiss have. The Swiss have a clause that says that 90% of the Swiss must vote for us to have a standing army, right? So obviously, it never gets to 90%, which means the Swiss never really have an army. Right. So demilitarization is something you write into your constitution and you put a high enough number so that it can never be reached. He's not going to get that. And he's not going to get a puppet like the guy in, the other country that's helping him. Right. There's this Belarusian dictator that's helping him.
Right. Yeah.
Basically, somebody that was put in by him. He's not going to get that. And he wanted that the most. He calls it the denazification. Yeah. Everybody's enemies are Nazis, clearly. So he's not going to get that piece. And that's what he wants the most. Ukraine will stay pro-West. Ukraine could eventually become part of the European Union, which is a financial union, not a military union. He just wants to make sure that Ukraine doesn't join NATO. So I think he'll get 3 out of 4. And in the next 30 to 60 days, he gets it. The other scenario is that in the next 30 to 60 days, there is no scenario in which he's going to conquer Ukraine. That scenario doesn't exist today. So he's going to get pushed back. And at some point, the Ukrainians are basically going, you know, because they're losing so many people, they're going to basically ask for peace. He gets 3 out of 4. He walks away. But the world doesn't take the punitive, you know, sanctions off. And so it destroys the Russian economy. The ruble basically becomes worthless within 6 or 12 months. The world goes back to doing what they're doing. The European Union takes a hit, but doesn't go into recession. Maybe it cuts their growth in half. They were projected to be at 3%, which is a lot for the European Union. Maybe they end up at 1.5%. So not such a good year, but not the end of the world. The US was supposed to grow at 4.5%. I think we're going to grow at about 3%. And on the interest rate hikes, really nothing changes except we might get an extra hike out of this. And you just think about this. If you're thinking this is really hurting the US economy, I have one argument, and it's the strongest one that I have, that this is not hurting us. This happens on Feb 21st, right? The Fed has been telegraphing for 1 year that on March 15th, they're going to hike interest rates. So for 1 year, everyone in the world knows the Fed is going to hike, you know, because their quantitative easing program is ending at the, you know, beginning of March. And so that's the right time to start raising interest rates. So the Fed is watching all this stuff happening for 24 days and doesn't even decide to move from March to April in terms of raising interest rates. They're like, shit, this doesn't affect us. We're going to raise rates anyway.
Yeah.
Well, they don't wait for a month. Right.
But doesn't that tell you that the inflation was a lot more serious than what's going on in Ukraine?
It's both, though, right? I mean, you have to weigh the fact that because of a higher price of oil, the inflation is going to spike more, which has obviously already happened. And then the other side is that when these kinds of things happen, if they affect the U.S. economy and slow it down, inflation would slow down anyway. So let's take the U.S. economy's growth. If you cut it in half, how can inflation go up? Inflation is based on demand. If you cut demand in half, you can't get the same inflation. Where will it come from? Less cars are being sold. Less cars are being driven. So the Fed believed that the hit that the US economy would be taking from the war was small enough that this was not as important as the inflation piece, which already was rampant. And that tells me that the most data-driven organization in the US is thinking, yes, we're going to take a hit from this, but I think we still need to worry about inflation more. Let's start raising interest rates. That's okay. A real problem that the U.S. had before this war started.
His name is Neil Bawa, growcapitalist.com. Neil, tell everybody your nom de plume, your pen name.
The mad scientist of multifamily. I'm data driven. Somebody called me the mad scientist once when I was up on stage. I think it was at the Best Ever conference. And I was like, this is fun. This represents the way I think. So I kept the name.
Yeah, I call Jillian Sidoti the Gloria Allred of securities attorneys. And that's why we're not partners anymore. So I think that was it. Neil, how can we find you?
The best way to find me is simply to Google my name, N-E-A-L, Neil, B-A-W-A. I don't have a podcast. I don't have any intention of creating one, but I've appeared on more podcasts than anyone in multifamily. So about 150.
Neil, they took me kicking and screaming to this podcast world, and now I wish it was the only thing I ever did. I love it. You don't know what you're missing. So Neil Bawa, Neil with an A, Bawa. 3 A's in the name. Track them down. Thanks, Neil, so much for being on the show. It's great to see you again.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Man. Talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm. You've reached the end of another episode of the Best Multifamily Investing Podcast Ever. For free resources and materials, head on over to www.multifamilyinvestingacademy.com. And if you love the Multifamily Investing Academy podcast, I'd love for you to subscribe, rate us, and give us a review on iTunes. And until next time, this is Charles Dobbins, the multifamily attorney, signing off.